Hey there, I'm Beth Connors, a midwife and mom of two, but also your birth bestie. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into everything you need to feel confident, prepared, and in control, from baby bump to delivery room, from practical tips to personal stories. We'll cover it all so you know exactly what to expect every step of the way. Let's get into it. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Your Birth Bestie podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. I am very excited to bring this episode to you and reveal some of the things that I have seen over the years, because over and over again, it seems to be a pattern of maternal care where there are these huge gaps of education that are completely missing for moms. Expecting parents are just not aware of their options simply because they are not discussed in prenatal visits with their doctor. And this is why taking a birth course, specifically one for how to have a positive hospital birth experience, is so important. Not just the one that your hospital provides. And you need to have that outside perspective, in my opinion, on your real choices and the truth about the power that you really do have in your own birth. It is not just about what to expect at that particular hospital or for how they frame labor to be and birth to be, even if it is well-intentioned, which I'm sure it is. I just think there is a lot of bias, and seeking another resource outside of that hospital system I found to be so helpful for expecting parents. So that is why I will be sharing with you the things that doctors won't tell you during pregnancy to have the best birth experience. You deserve this info, you need this info, and I would love to talk to you more about any of these things if you have questions, so you can approach your hospital birth with confidence and with autonomy. Before we start, I just wanted to say to anyone who is pregnant as you are listening to this, I understand your fears and your concerns that might be in your head, because I have been there too, and I get a lot of the same questions all the time, so want to help support all of those worries and really eliminate any fears that you might have. But I also want you to know that together we can uncover the truth about hospital birth that often gets overlooked, and give you the tools to make informed decisions and ensure that your voice is heard. So before you go at the end of this episode, be sure to download the best free resource that I have yet made. So if you've liked any of my other free resources, you are going to love this one. And it is called 15 Hidden Hospital Birth Choices Every Pregnant Mom Should Know, from your first appointment to your last. So you can find it at bethconnors.com/choices and download that document to uncover some of the choices that you probably never knew that you had. You can also get out of that "what am I quote unquote allowed to do" mindset and take control of your birth today. So right away here, I am going to call out inductions and really the overuse of them first and foremost. The rise of inductions is absolutely mind-blowing, from only being 9.5% of moms being induced in 1990, and then today, it is 33%, which comes down to 1 in 3 moms are getting induced. And it's not uncommon for hospitals to suggest inductions, really for convenience at 39 weeks or after, whenever mom is ready or whenever she is excited or anxious or just can't wait to meet her baby. Yes, those days and weeks right before you give birth are very, very long, and it is so freaking tempting to just schedule that induction, or even as a soft call for if something is concerning for providers, they may just jump to induction right away. But there may be alternatives of expectant management before always jumping to that immediate delivery with induction. So these are all things to think about. Of course, it would be great for everyone's schedule and planning purposes. I am 1000% a planner, and I would love to know when labor would start or how long it was going to take, because that would help you mentally prepare, right? And also exactly how it would play out. But that is just not the case. And being in birth work and being moms, we have to be okay with that, and we have to learn to be okay with that. As providers, we got into this work for a reason, and we have to accept that there is unpredictability in this work of birth. Overusing inductions is absolutely not okay, and not fully informing patients on the risks of inductions is absolutely not okay either. Inductions, of course, come with risks. And the key here is, as a patient, you need to discuss your options with your healthcare provider and start that conversation if they don't bring these things up. Don't at all hesitate to ask questions. Don't hesitate to express your concerns and really, truly consider the necessity of induction in your specific situation. You have the right to decline an induction at any point if you're not comfortable with that option. And as long as you are informed and willing to accept the risks presented to you, because they should be, and you should be asking questions, and then after considering all of those things, you might still instinctively feel that the best choice is to postpone that medical induction or that elective induction. And that is great. And I support that. And I hope you are getting support by your provider to make sure that you and your baby are staying healthy in an additional way and having a time frame or a plan for the future on what that would look like and what you would be comfortable with if something else did come up. So these are all conversations. It is not black and white. And if somebody were to offer you an induction, you have the right to question it. And I want to be fully transparent. So I myself had 2 elective inductions with both of my hospital births. My first pregnancy, I didn't know that I was consenting to an elective induction, which is absolutely wild and totally not acceptable. And you can hear that story in episode 2 of this podcast. But I went to L&D from my clinic appointment when I was found to be 6 centimeters dilated on a random cervical exam in the office that I was pretty much convinced to have, and I had no other signs of labor. I, at this point, should absolutely have gone home, but I was not given that choice, so I was rushed over to labor and delivery without a thought, just complied to whatever was happening and agreed to everything. I didn't even feel one contraction at this point, but just rolled with it, and I thought that that was okay and that was normal. But looking back, this is so disappointing that this is how my healthcare team treated the situation. And then with my second hospital birth, I, for some reason, was also 7 centimeters dilated without labor signs at a clinic visit and offered an induction. And I went home. So I went home for a few hours and then made that decision on my own to get admitted then for the induction, where they just broke my bag of water and I had a baby very quickly. But it was something that I chose for myself and I felt comfortable with those risks. Since then, those 2 experiences were absolutely learning experiences. And even though the first birth was traumatic for me, and thankfully that second birth was such an amazing redemptive experience, I would now, if I went back, have done both differently and not even had that cervical exam in the first place to know that I was so far dilated, to even tempt me to be induced for a diagnosis of advanced dilation. I have so much more trust now in my body, even just 1.5 years later from my continuing education this past year. And I wish I could just shake my previous self and be like, why are you doing this? Why is your provider wanting to do cervical exams and membrane sweeps and breaking your bag of water to speed things along? But to me at the time, it all seemed okay. But I too should have questioned why I was doing these things. Ultimately, what it was, though, was it was just me being impatient and not having the support and the confidence to wait. It was really as simple as that. So if this is you, please just remember that it is your body, your baby, it is your birth. You have the right to be informed and make decisions that are best for you and for your baby. Hopefully, with me learning these things later on in life, you will take these lessons now in this episode and apply them how you see fit to have the best experience that you can and hopefully eliminate some of the stressful situations that I was put through. Going off this too, in terms of trying to schedule and control birth, is understanding hospital routines versus individual needs. What your doctor won't tell you is that hospitals have routines and policies and procedures. But often those routines may prioritize efficiency or staffing issues over your individual needs. Continuous fetal monitoring, artificially rupturing your bag of membranes, and strict timelines are all part of the hospital protocol. But I want you to remember that you can advocate for what's best for you and that your comfort and your preferences absolutely matter. I promise you that nothing makes me more angry than hearing stories of moms being rushed in labor and their labor augmented, which means sped along, the moment that they get to the hospital. The textbook definition, if we are getting technical, is an adequate contraction pattern to help your cervix dilate and help labor progress, is strong contractions every 2 to 3 minutes apart, lasting for 1 minute each. If you go into the hospital early in your labor and you are admitted, this is the standard that you are often held to. And if you don't make cervical change every few hours, as they are constantly checking you or asking to check you, and your contractions aren't in that ideal pattern, you bet Pitocin is the first thing that's just automatically added, really without question. Or breaking your bag of water. Basically, just artificial interventions to make things happen faster. But faster is not better. The speed at which you birth your baby is completely individualized, and the hospital routines should reflect that. But I promise you, they absolutely do not. So definitely learn what hospital routines may affect your labor and how you would handle certain situations. And then make those plans in those situations way before labor even starts, so you are ready to advocate for yourself no matter what happens. Also consider ways to support minimizing that time that you are quote unquote on the clock at the hospital by considering to stay home during early labor. Your provider won't always give you this option unless you maybe specifically ask about it, because again, it's about convenience. It's about getting you in the hospital, helping you deliver your baby, and sending you on your way, unfortunately. I know that sounds terrible, but I feel like that is something that I've seen way, way too often. It is often beneficial, though, to stay home during early labor. So knowing when it's the right time to head to the hospital is important, because really arriving too early can definitely lead to unnecessary interventions. I would love for you to trust your instincts and to not rush birth. Early labor can be such a beautiful and intimate time for you and for your partner, so why not enjoy it if you can? Another part of childbirth preparation that is often neglected and your provider won't often tell you details about or all of your options is pain management. They'll probably ask you if you're planning to have an epidural or if that's not part of the plan or if you're open to whatever happens, but there is usually no conversation about many other ways that you can manage labor without medication if that's something that you're interested in or if you want to wait as long as possible for the epidural, but maybe you're planning on getting it later on. There are so many options and so many alternatives of natural pain coping methods that don't rely on IV pain medication or the epidural. And what I've noticed is that hospitals focus on epidurals as the main pain management option, and some providers even encourage them, because it is definitely true that a laboring mom who doesn't feel a single contraction is happily lying on her back in the bed, maybe laughing with her partner. They're cooperative to exactly how the provider wants things to play out at delivery. This would be a pleasant experience for the provider, right? It would make their job very easy. But at what risk? Not only is this fantasy land not at all what's guaranteed to happen when you have an epidural, there are also risks to getting an epidural and potential disappointments from mom if she wasn't supported to have that unmedicated birth that she wants. It sometimes just feels like providers are inconvenienced when moms are trying for unmedicated natural deliveries, and they aren't able to provide that one-on-one continuous support like they should be able to, and that is expected from moms who want that experience. But the reality is, in a hospital setting, whether there is an OBGYN or a midwife caring for an expecting parent, there is often many other women on the floor having babies as well that they are caring for. So they're not able to go into all of the rooms at the same time, which is a lot of the reason why I think epidurals are so heavily pushed and why the skill of supporting physiologic birth in the hospital is becoming way less common. So knowing how comfortable your provider is at supporting physiologic birth is really important to know, and so is knowing all sorts of other alternatives to consider for pain management besides maybe an epidural or IV pain medication if you're trying to avoid those, because there are so many different things that you can do. It is also about the mindset and planning for what coping techniques will work best for you, and then actually putting in the work and practicing for when you actually do go into labor. I have worked with many moms who wanted an unmedicated birth, but didn't think they were going to be able to handle the pain of birth based on what they heard in their life, or about how terrible it was, or that they thought that they had a low pain tolerance. But when they uncover alternatives and really see how many options there are to coping with labor pain and breaking down how to breathe through a contraction and how to feel supported in labor, it becomes not so scary. It was much more in their control than they had ever thought it could be, and they actually surprised themselves and went on to have unmedicated hospital births. Women absolutely find relief in alternative pain coping methods, and epidurals don't have to be the only way. And if you're planning for an epidural already, that is amazing too that you've decided that for yourself and that you know what is best for you, because it ultimately is whatever you want and whatever is going to make your birth experience the best for yourself. And you should feel supported in that choice and not forced into a decision that is ultimately based on your provider's comfort, not yourself. Remember that you have choices, and exploring those options can empower you to create the ideal birth experience for yourself. And another option during birth that I want you to know that you absolutely have, even though time and time again, and it happened with me during my first birth, is that I was helped or basically forced onto my back when I was 10 centimeters dilated to begin pushing. But you have the option to choose what position you want to deliver your baby in. Even if your provider tells you that they can only deliver in one position, being on your back, because I have heard that before, this is absolutely not true, and I would switch providers if you find out about this ahead of time. But if this does happen to you in the middle of your labor, you can absolutely decline anything, and you can keep doing your own thing, focus on what's comfortable for you, and continue laboring in the way that is most comfortable for you. Like I said, many providers will favor moms to deliver in the bed, lying on their back, with their feet in the stirrups, and one person maybe is holding each leg all the way back into your chest. And I remember when this was me, and I was pushing for 4 hours on my back with my first baby without any position changes, even though all I wanted to do was flip around, be on my hands and knees, lean over the top of the bed like I had been laboring through each contraction. But I was told that that wasn't how they delivered babies, and that I just had to basically do what I was told. So I was told at 10 centimeters dilated to lie on my back. I was yelled at and counted to keep pushing for 10 seconds while my legs were being yanked all the way back to my head. It was awful looking back, but I thought this was normal at the time because I didn't know any better. And as we are talking now about pushing and when that time comes, I think it brings up a good point too, that the time in which you begin pushing is another important part to consider and know about ahead of time. Just because your hospital provider may encourage immediate pushing when you're found to be 10 centimeters dilated, it's absolutely okay to wait for the natural urge to push, and I actually recommend it. And this is something that your provider will often not mention to you in pregnancy, and you probably won't even know about until maybe after you have a negative experience and you learn later on why that was. And this is what happened to me. It is really amazing when you can pause for a second, let your body guide you, and trust the instincts that will help you hopefully bring your baby to you with ease, rather than just forcing your body to do something that it's not ready to do. And it comes down to how your baby is also positioned in your pelvis to give you that urge to feel like you need to push. So if you don't have that urge, your baby just might not be ready. And this pushing phase is going to be so much longer for you, probably more painful, can cause more troubles postpartum if you're prolonged pushing. So I just wanted to mention that as well. And I will never know if this would have been beneficial for me, but I'd have to imagine that starting to push at 10 centimeters dilated without any luck for 4 hours and then reaching a point that they needed to intervene. And they told me we can either do a C-section or a vacuum assisted delivery because 4 hours was their time limit, that I would have had a shorter pushing time if I would have just waited for the natural urge to push and maybe not even had that cervical exam that they told me I was 10 centimeters, because who knows how long before that I was 10 centimeters. I could have waited until I felt the urge. This is what I like to think about. So it's unfortunate though that I went through this and that so many other moms do as well. So I hope from hearing my experiences and now as a midwife, this would never be something that I would recommend or have a patient do. Even with an epidural, you can be in different positions as you are pushing, and you should be encouraged to move and to do what feels best for you in that situation. You have the right also to request alternative positions like squatting or kneeling or using a birthing stool. You can also actually push lying on your side in the bed if you have an epidural, and I actually encourage you to have an idea of what sounds like it would work for you and have a plan of what choice you might make when the time comes. And kind of as a side note, it was so strange to me when I was working in the hospital that OBs always did what we called broke down the labor bed. So they're taking the labor bed apart. It comes off on the bottom half, take out that part, and mom's feet automatically go in those stirrups. So when mom was pushing, it was easier to do certain maneuvers if needed during delivery, and it really just gave them more control. Midwives never ever broke down the bed. It was not ever a difficult situation to have a mom deliver with the foot of the bed attached. And it also felt way less intrusive to mom. Because what really happens is the nurse calls the doctor in when the baby is just about to be born. And I feel like that's when the chaos really ramps up and more people are coming into the room. The bed is taken apart. The bright lights are turned on in the room that are directly at the vaginal area for better visualization for baby. Also something that I never did as a midwife. It just completely ruins what's going on in the room and the mom's focus. And then the baby warmer is turned on, where if there's any issues with baby transitioning to being born, that's where resuscitation measures would be taken. That's where exams are done after that golden hour. But that machine makes a bunch of noise. And again, more people are called into the room. And it's just this whole big deal. And I am going off on a tangent now, unrelated to labor positions, but just in general, the environment of the room and how your birth unfolds should be up to you. I absolutely recommend including in your birth plan how you envision your birth, down to even who is allowed in your room and what you want it to look like and feel like, sound like, smell like. All of those things are really, really important. But then in regards to positioning, your body knows how to give birth and to adapt to your baby's movements as they are also trying to find their way out. And finding a position that feels right for you can make all of the difference, and only you know what that is. Don't be afraid to let your preferences be heard. And as you are advocating for yourself, it is also just as important to know and question certain policies or standard routines in the hospital that you are delivering at. You have probably heard someone say, or maybe you believe it yourself, that I wasn't allowed to eat or drink during labor. And this is not at all true. I have actually heard many midwives agree that this is not the best practice, that they don't agree with this in the hospitals, but it is the hospital that they work for that creates this policy, so they have to recommend it as well. But just because this may be the case for you in your hospital too, and this is the recommendation maybe, it doesn't mean that you have to follow it. It's important to discuss this with your healthcare provider to understand where they're coming from and to explore different options to make sure, based on your own situation, that you are adequately nourished during your intense journey of childbirth, and to be able to eat light snacks and drink water or electrolyte drinks or whatever. It truly doesn't make sense to me how women are starved for days when it is not evidence-based. So if you want to eat and drink in labor, definitely do your research and talk to your provider about this so you don't have any surprises going into the hospital. And the last thing that I want to mention, and I get just as equally frustrated as when I mentioned rushing labor like I talked about before, but is the use of Pitocin routinely after delivery. And I am talking about immediately after delivery when your baby is born. I am making up this number, but based on my experience, I would say 9 out of 10 moms don't know whether or not they receive Pitocin in that immediate postpartum phase. It is just part of the hospital medical system that nurses routinely hang the IV medication of Pitocin on the IV pump, and it's started at delivery and then increased when the placenta is delivered to help that uterus contract down in hopes of reducing bleeding. But even though that is the active management recommendation in medicine for every mom, moms still need to have this choice and know that this is happening. It is their right to consent to everything that is happening and to know the reason that they are receiving Pitocin after delivery and choose that for themselves if that's something that they're interested in. But when I've asked many moms this question, most of them say they really have no idea if it happened to them postpartum. They know if it happened in labor to help with their contractions, but after their baby is born, they really have no idea what happened, which I think is just awful. And moms have the right to know what they're getting and why, and have the actual chance to consent to this. And when I first started out as a labor and delivery nurse, this is when I first saw this happening, and it felt very strange that people were giving medications to a mom without them consenting. So what I made sure to do as a labor and delivery nurse was always preparing my patients ahead of time for a few steps ahead in the birth process, whether they took a childbirth course or not. I felt like most people didn't, so they had no idea why this Pitocin was being used. But giving them that education ahead of time is just so empowering, and they were always grateful for it and thanked them for that heads up, and they had time to think about it. Pitocin education absolutely was part of this education every single time, in addition to many other things. But it truly amazes me how many parents aren't actually given the same level of education when they are in the hospital, because I want you to have all of the information and have everything that you need to have the best possible birth. So if you have any questions about any of these things we covered or anything at all as you're preparing for your upcoming birth, definitely message me on Instagram or reach out to me on my website. However you can get a hold of me, send me an email. I would love to chat with you. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Your Birth Bestie podcast. I hope this was helpful and maybe even thought-provoking going into some of your upcoming prenatal appointments, considering what you are interested in learning more about, and really advocating for your wishes. If you are expecting your little one at the end of this year or early next year, I want to invite you to join the waitlist for my newest program coming out on November 8th. It's called Your Birth Bestie One-on-One Virtual Support through Pregnancy, Birth, and Postpartum. I will only be able to take a few clients, so be sure to sign up for the waitlist to get first dibs and access to special bonuses. This will be a fully comprehensive, personalized support package for you as you are navigating this journey, and also includes virtual birth support when you go into labor. And I am so excited to support you in this way. So head on over to bethconnors.com/waitlist and sign up. I am looking forward to meeting you. And until then, remember, you have the power to make informed decisions, stand up for yourself, and create a positive hospital birth experience. Thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you next Tuesday. Bye, everyone.